Hi everyone, and welcome to Sped Homeschool Conversations. We are going to have a great night tonight. So Sped Homeschool Conversations is a broadcast of Sped Homeschool, and we're a 501c3 nonprofit, and we encourage parents and we empower them so that they can help their children succeed as they teach them in their homeschool, and especially for the struggling learners. And so we cover a lot of topics that help parents who have children who struggle in lots of different areas. And tonight we're going to talk about social skills and relational skills, and whether or not your child struggles academically, socially and relationally, it seems like more and more we're having those issues. And it's not because our kids are isolated when they're homeschooled. It's just because we have sensory issues and autism spectrum issues and all these other things that come into play with our kids. And so our guest tonight is Janie Holleran, and she is a licensed medical health counselor and mostly works with children and adolescents. She's also a mom of two, and she's the founder of Encourage Play. And in addition to that, she's an author. She has two books. One's called Coping Skills for Kids. It's a workbook. And her new book is Social Skills for Kids, and it has games and activities in it. And it looks like a lot of fun. I haven't even opened that one. I just discovered that. But in her free time, which I'm wondering what her free time is she enjoys gardening, arts and crafts, dancing. You got to tell us a little bit about that. And she says she has a weakness for Nutella and Netflix. So welcome, Jane. I'm so glad to have you here tonight as we talk about social and relational skill building through play dates.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. And what a great introduction. That's so much fun. I do have a problem. I tend to do a lot of things all at the same time. I tend to write something at the same time. It's fine. It worked out okay. I love that Social Skills for Kids book because it is so much fun for small group lessons. I used to run small groups for kids on the autism spectrum, kids with ADHD, kids who are just struggling socially. Yeah. And through that, I found a lot of play was really what made those teachable moments stick for kids. And so I created this whole book where it was all these play, sort of structured play activities, group challenges, fun games that kids can play, but also at the same time work on those essential social skills.
Right. Yeah. Because we always think play is not, you know, that important, or we kind of put it off to the side as we'll do that when we're done with, you know, all these important things. And more we're learning, I think, as parents, we're understanding that play helps with even academics. We did one whole month on just active learning. But the social and relational skills as well are so key to that, because there's so much interaction involved and we can monopolize that. And that's what we're going to talk about tonight. I'm so excited about that. And unfortunately, I think the hard part is we think that when we put our kids in school, them sitting in a classroom, they're going to be building these skills, where that it's just not facilitated properly.
No, it doesn't happen. It's sort of done in that those unstructured times, that recess, that lunch group or lunch areas. And that's, it's challenging, especially if your kids are struggling with that. That can be a place where kids get really lost, and it can feel really bad to not be able to figure out what are the social cues. Why is nobody playing with me? It can be really devastating for a kid.
Yeah. Yes, definitely. And so as parents, you're going to give us some ways that we can kind of transition and work in those things. So we're not just throwing our kids to the lions.
No, absolutely not.
We're saying, yes, there's ways that we can work on this. Amy made a comment. Oh, and I do want to let you know, if you are joining us live, feel free to have comments, questions. We would encourage that, because this is about interacting with our guest. You know, the reason we started these videos was because a lot of our parents say, I really want to go to those homeschool conferences or those conferences where I can hear speakers and authors. And yet, getting childcare is so difficult. And so here's a way every week you can interact with somebody new on a topic that's important. And so definitely take advantage of this. You have Janie for this hour. So interact and give us your questions on, you know, or maybe some situations that you have dealt with. You say, did I do this the right way? How should I have handled this? How do I move on? How do I get my child to move on from this? Because sometimes play dates don't end so well.
Right.
And how do we transition? So Amy's comment was, and our comments are working. I told Janie, we're working on a beta version tonight. So that's why you see our show has a brand new look. But the comments are working, thankfully. She said, play is essential to learning. The brain needs a break and time to consolidate the learning. And it's often happens through play. So true.
Yeah,
I agree with that.
Absolutely. I think one of my favorite books to talk about is the book Play by Stuart Brown and Christopher Vaughn. It is phenomenal because I remember the first time I read it, I read it on a Kindle. And so I was highlighting all these different quotes.
So you bought the physical copy, didn't you?
I had to eventually do it. Because it was so chock full of great information. And I have to tell you, Stuart Brown is still as incredible in person, just hearing him talk about the importance of play and how play is a child's language and how people learn so much through play. You learn so many things through play. It was incredible to watch him speak. But one thing that I love that he mentions in this book is that, you know, he talks about animals playing actually and how, you know, in the animal world, play is actually used as a way to teach socialization as well.
Right.
So cats who are deprived of play fighting, but they still learn how to hunt, they can hunt just fine, but they never learn how to socialize because they didn't have that experience with play, which is fascinating.
Interesting.
It's fascinating.
Yeah. Oh, I still have a kitten that's working on that, and he attacks us from around corners. It's scary. It is sort of cute until you get blood. So, we learning and communicating. I know that those were the key things that we're going to talk about tonight is because not only is social skills just what we do, but it's what we say and it's how we say it. And then it's watching how someone reacts to it too. And so your child is processing all of this information, and what better experience than with someone else? But how do we set up those experiences to be positive, or even prepare our child ahead of those that they're ready? Because we aren't just going to say, oh, we set up a play date and we're going to have so much fun and then just push this child towards someone else they've never met. I mean, that's not even something we want to do.
No, and that's the thing. In some ways it's so foreign from how you would typically, or in the past, how things would be set up. So everybody talks about, well, you know, why do we have to have play dates? You know, why can't kids just get together? Because that's not the reality that we live in anymore. Neighborhoods don't exist the way that they did before. Kids don't have an opportunity to get together. Right. And truthfully, if our kids are struggling, they have a lot of appointments. So they may have speech, they may have OT, they may have all sorts of things that are going on. So unfortunately, it means that you do sometimes have to schedule it. Also, parents are busy too with their jobs and whatever they have to do and their responsibilities.
Yes.
So sometimes it just makes the most sense to plan something so that you can actually have that good time. Just because it's planned doesn't mean it has to be, it's not fun or it's not helpful or it's not something that can be enjoyable. It can still be awesome. You have to plan it a little bit, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's taking the spontaneity out doesn't make it any better. It does make it better, but over time, our children will learn to be more spontaneous.
Right. And when, even though it's a planned play date, the play itself can be a little bit spontaneous. And that's right. The fun part, you know, that's what we want to see. We want to see them trying some different ways of playing. So whenever I start talking with a kid and a family about having a play date and starting to sort of explore that, I always start with, are there people in your life right now that you think are cool, or your acquaintances, or you've seen them at the library or something, you know, you have something, maybe they're at your church or at a book group that you have, something where then you can start to say, okay, you know, we're acquaintances, but I think our kids seem to do okay together. I'd love to, you know, take a moment and like have that time where we can actually do some more focused playing together. And so just using the people that are around you in a way to think about what makes the most sense. And I've been in a couple of Facebook groups where families who are struggling with different issues, they have, you know, these groups are big enough where they'll say, I'd love to have a play date for my kid. We are in this area. And they actually have lists of where people are. It's closed groups, so it doesn't feel like you're giving your information away to somebody else. But there are great connections that can be made. You might not know how close you are to somebody, but you can make that connection with somebody and make a mom friend, maybe.
Right, exactly. Yes, you can work on two different relationships at the same time. I know some parents do that in our support group on Facebook and, reaching out. But definitely, that's that local connection is so important. And just being able to, we often tell people to go to different local homeschool groups, because a lot of them have like park dates. And I say, just scope out the best friend, you know, somebody that seems like they kind of click with your child, and, you know, you don't have to have a long-term relationship with them. But say, you know, maybe let's just see if that works out to come over to our house once. And so those are some nice places to make connections as well. That's kind of how we got started. My boys had a hard time. My son got kicked out of church way too many times, you know, but just one theater group for the one child and another activity that the other one did. And it was just close friends that we could connect with. So just keep trying to find those connections where kids, you can find other families that may be willing to take a chance as well. You almost have to have that conversation ahead of time with another parent too, that this is what you're doing. So do you have any advice on that end of, you know, how do I approach another parent and say, I'd like to make this a learning experience. Are you into this too?
You know what? I would say I've been reading a little bit of Brené Brown recently, and she talks about, you know, being brave and being vulnerable and having your vulnerability be brave. And so it's very vulnerable to reveal yourself to another parent. But a lot of times I feel like you can pick out those parents who are going to like get you, like you make eye contact. And so you use your own sort of social cues of like, oh gosh, you know, my kids are getting along really well with them. I'm going to scope out the mom, maybe go sit next to her, see what's going on, have a little chat, talk about coffee, see what happens, you know? It is a little bit like, almost like dating in a way, because you have to like put yourself out there, but it can be so rewarding. And I have to say, my son struggled with playdates when he was little, but we found a friend from preschool, and he didn't struggle so much at preschool. He struggled at home, and he struggled with social interactions with other people. But I found this mom, and she and I just clicked, and the kids loved each other. And it was great because they were able to have some play dates. Now, it didn't always go smoothly. There were definitely times it ended in a nasty way, but I learned from that and figured out how to frame it so that it worked better. And that's the thing. Like, it's imperfect. It's never going to be the perfect play date. But if you have more good than bad, that's a win in my book.
Yeah. There's been some families that have come and gone in our lives, and you know, and for the time being, you know, we had a couple play dates, and then we just moved on. It just didn't seem to click. And then there were those other families that, even though we've moved states away, we still stay in contact. You know, and so you have to take a chance and say, I'm out there. These are my issues.
Yeah.
Are you willing to take on my issues along with, and I'll take on yours. Yeah. So, yes. And Amy even said, she said, it's so relaxing and refreshing to get together with parents who get it.
Right. I mean, ideally you'd love to have that parent who you wouldn't have to clean your house. That's really hard to come by, but.
So true. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Or even that can see my kids' rooms the way they always are. I went to a friend's house yesterday and her kids' rooms were impeccable. And I went, oh goodness, don't come to my house.
No.
Or at least don't go upstairs where my kids' rooms are. So yeah. Anyways. So in the notes that that you sent me, you talked about preparing the space and setting the stage for success. So what, you know, having your child in a comfortable
situation. You live and you learn. It doesn't. The way you want it to, but it's one of those, it was a learning and a teachable moment, a learning opportunity at that point, you know, but to keep, and so to know that you can set up the house in a way that you like, and in a way that makes your, that you know will work for your own child, but then also keeping it time limited, I think is huge. I've been,
like, are they going?
Exactly. And you're like, how do I push you out? Like, this is how, and, you know, like, what are the social cues of, like, how do I tell them that it's time to go? And it's sort of like, I always talk with the parent beforehand when it, especially when my kids were younger. Now they're a little bit older, so it's a little bit more flexible. But when they were younger, I'd be like, okay, and so we have something in at blah, blah, blah. So we have to be all done at blah, blah, blah. And, you know, and it worked really well when we sort of set that expectation up front that this is how long it's going to be. Because especially if a child is struggling, if you have that time limit, that it's more likely that it will go well in a shorter period of time. So keep it.
Yeah. And I don't even know. I'm thinking that even like having a timer that they can go check if they're starting to feel anxious, and, you know, it doesn't have to be out in public so that the other child, you know, is going, are they just watching the time till I get out of here? But for them to have, I know my son probably would have really liked if I did that now that I'm thinking about it, and he's 22, because he's always telling me the exact time down to the second.
Oh gosh.
but that would have been a comfort for him to know, oh, okay, I can make it for the next 10, 15 minutes until we're done. And then instead of having to come always ask me how much time is left, you know,
get
one of the visual timers or something.
Yeah, exactly. I love those things. And then, you know, also reviewing expectations, you know, what is it and what does it look like? What does it mean when I say be respectful to your guests? What does it mean to be polite to a guest? How does that actually work out? You know, and then, you know, right when the person comes in, you have that perfect teachable opportunity right there, seeing how they are interacting and how they can do it. And you can be there to say, okay, that excellent job, or ooh, maybe we could say it a little bit differently. So there's always that learning opportunity that's there.
Right. Yeah. And I even found that having like certain, like for things that I didn't want to correct my son in front of someone else for, we would have like hand signals.
Okay. Yeah.
There would just be a cue between the two of us that, you know, that wasn't a good thing to say, or, you know, or maybe you shouldn't be that close to that person, you know, if they have proximity issues, or, you know, just things like that,
right.
That, you know, then the other child's not feeling like, oh goodness, their mom is just on top of them all the time.
I know. It's this whole balance of like how, you know, you want to be around because you want to be able to monitor, but you don't want to helicopter over them as they're playing. So it's this balance of, I always try to like keep an ear out and like be within eyesight. It's like one of those things. I love the open like floor plans of houses, because then I can be in the kitchen and chatting, but then also sort of keeping an eye and looking to see, is everything going okay? But you also, you can start to hear your kid escalate. You know what it sounds like.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, so that's that motherly instinct. Yeah. It's like, oh, no, something's going to happen soon.
And then you book it right in.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, so true. So even going over things ahead of time with your child, you know, what types of things would you recommend the parent, you know, do? And then how do we approach that with our child so that they take it on saying, okay, this isn't just all this stuff lumping on top of me. My parent wants me to be successful. How do we transfer to them that this is helpful information I'm giving you and that we're working on? It isn't just something that these are the rules of the road and this is what you have to do when a friend comes over. Because I think my kids would often misinterpret, you know, this is mom's thing versus what I really need to know.
Right. It's so tricky. So I love to be able to have frank conversations with kids who are older, who are just a little bit older, I can say, you know, I know you really like him. I know you really want to hang out with him. And so yeah. I want it to go well. So, and I think that you want it to go well too. So what can we do? How can we make that possible? What are there certain things that we can do? Are there certain games that you know that he likes to play? Are there things that he, you know, what are things you can talk about? Even thinking about topics of conversation that you can talk about. Maybe they both love Pokemon. So let's bring out some Pokemon cards and just, we can sort them and we can look at them and we can, you know, talk all about, you know, let's go Pokemon or, you know, the Pokemon movie. Let's talk about Detective Pikachu, which I enjoyed. So, you know, it's all these different things that you can have conversations about, but having the talk with your child beforehand. So it's not, I'm telling you that you need to do this because it's the rule and I'm mom. It's more like, I want you to enjoy your time with him. So how can we make sure that you enjoy your time with him?
Right. And it's all, and that's highlighting too, when we are with someone else, it's not about us that we need to focus on. And so when we show our kids, okay, when you start pulling out those questions, you're almost prompting them. Yeah. To think about that child instead of themselves. And so in essence, you're preparing them to start thinking about what the other child is thinking instead of, well, how am I enjoying this time and what am I getting out of it?
Right. Absolutely. And it's all about taking somebody else's perspective, which is really challenging to do. It is very challenging to do. It's very challenging to try and teach a child to do that. But a playdate is a natural way where you can do that. Where by having those conversations, what do you think your friend's going to like to play with? What do you, even with your sibling, what do you think your sibling wants to have for dinner? What do you think your sibling wants to play? You know, you start that to have those conversations and it can start helping kids think of the other instead of themselves. And it's natural, it's human.
But right. Yes.
In order to relate to other people, you got to think about them.
Exactly. And so it gives them, you know, in those play date situations, they're in those for a short period of time where they're focused on that relationship, and then they can kind of draw back too, especially for those kids that are introverts. And, you know, that just drains them. If you got a half an hour to an hour. And I know my son would just say, I just need to be alone now.
Yeah.
So
yes,
it's very important.
Yeah. And to honor that, to honor the introverts of the world, that it can be, it is exhausting to be around other people. It can feel great, but it is so tiring. And then to recognize you're going to need a little, like probably the same amount of time by yourself to sort of recover after
that. Well, and that's a good coping skill too, to teach them because, you know, as they get older, they need to start segmenting their time themselves. Yes. And so if you continually tell them, you know, to refresh after being with people, this is just something that you do. And it works well for you because look at how much better you feel after you've had that time. And so I know with my kids, it's been the same thing. It's, you know, you just, you speak out what they need to learn to implement themselves. And eventually they start speaking it out themselves. Right. It's just a copy mechanism, but they don't know that. They're like, yeah, I just need this.
Right. And then it becomes internal. So then you can help them come up with a plan, but the whole goal is for them to come up with their own plan. That's my favorite. Yes. Is when my clients say to me, I had a client say to me a couple of years ago, I thought of what you would say. And I thought of, you would say, what's your plan? And then I said, I'm going to make a plan. And she made a plan for herself. And I said, that's exactly what I wanted you to do. You got it? Perfect.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Exactly. You become that life coach in your head.
Yeah.
What would somebody say to me that I respect? And yeah, right. There you go. Yep. So I definitely wanted to go a little bit on scaffolding and supporting play dates through that process. And so let's start first talking about what is scaffolding. So that parents who have never heard that, that word before can say, okay, I don't understand this. So let's touch on that first, but then how do we transition to using that technique with play dates and helping our children to develop those social and relational skills?
Absolutely. So scaffolding is basically when a parent is just sort of helping and supporting. So when you think about scaffolding, it's a support. It's in there to help, and it's necessary so that kids can learn those different skills if they need support in terms of, what should I do next? What should I play? What should I say? What's the schedule going to be? All of that can be seen as scaffolding. So you're building in maybe a schedule, or you're built a loose itinerary of things that they can do, choices that they can make, play ideas that they can put out, and you can have them ready. So those are all sort of examples of different scaffolding that parents can do when they are having a play date. So that just giving them the support that they need without being sort of right next to them all the time. It may start where you have to be next to them because of whatever, because of where they are. But the goal is always with scaffolding, you don't want it to be on the building forever, right? You need to take it away.
Exactly.
You need to take it away bit by bit as the building gets stronger. So as your child gets stronger, you take that piece, the things that you're doing away, and they can do it on their own. And obviously, it's going to be, let's do a check-in, let's see how you're doing, and just keeping an eye and ear out. But the goal is for them to be able to do this on their own. Some kids just can't do it immediately when they first start doing play dates, and that's fine.
Right. I think, it's almost, I know my parenting instinct was, well, I'll just teach everything to you and then just throw you out in there. And because that's how I was raised. And I realized really quickly that did not work.
Yep.
We had a lot of issues. but then I it almost, you get this guilt. Well, I'm aiding them. I'm doing something, but when we don't give our child the proper supports they need, we actually make their condition worse.
Right.
And so as a parent, don't feel guilty about the support your child needs.
Yep.
Because eventually when you do pull back and they're fine, then they aren't going to ask for it back. Right. They love that freedom. So, yeah.
No, absolutely. And that's the thing. And I think people, and there's also this whole judgment from other people saying, well, or from maybe family, why do you need to do that for them? They should be able to do it on their own. And it's hard to stand on your own two feet and say, I know my child and I know what they need. And it's not babying them, and it's not, overprotecting them. It's giving them the supports that they really do need in order to succeed. And it's not going to last forever. Different things for different kids, and that's okay.
Yeah, so true. And yes, you do have to be bold, because there's a lot of people, and we talked about this last week. I talked to a motivational speaker on just, what do you deal with other people's opinions? And he's like, you know what? You just realize that if they're saying something to you, that they have a bigger issue than you do.
Yes.
I was like, yes, that's so true.
Yeah. It says more about them than it says about you. And it's, it's incredible how many people are willing to put out their opinions about mm-hmm. things on everywhere. Just yes. everywhere.
I know. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So take it with a grain of salt and yep. And just remember you're doing your best and yep. and really that's all we can do. And so that kind of moves us into the next thing when things don't go well.
Yeah.
And that grace that we can give ourselves and our child and just how do we move through those situations, first of all, when they're going on.
Yep.
And then how do we move through those things afterwards and learn from them and also move on past them, not only as a parent, but to help our child to do that as well. I know yeah. that's some really big struggles because we can say, oh, play dates don't work. We're done. And then we can just isolate ourselves, which right. is not the right solution.
Right. Absolutely not. And it can feel like something. It feels so bad when it goes wrong and you feel like you've done something wrong and you haven't. They're just mm-hmm. learning. They're and you have to think of it as they are in the process of learning. Mm-hmm. This is learning happening right in front of me. It's kind yeah. of, it can be overwhelming. It can be kind of loud. It can be a little bit intimidating. Oh my goodness, they're hitting each other. You know? Yeah.
Well, if he's with his brother, he'd be doing the same thing. So,
yeah, exactly. And so I always like to start with, like, if I'm hearing my child escalate, I like to go and I'm doing the whole listening and, you know, keeping my ear open and keeping my eyes sort of on them. So I'll go in and I just say, everybody freeze or everybody pause. And usually that's enough for people to like stop. Because especially the word pause or freeze, like it's almost like you can do it in even a playful way. And if you come in soon enough, they will stop. Mm-hmm. And then you sort of can separate them. So like, I always like to like put a little distance between them and then do something calming, do a calming activity, try taking a few deep breaths together, you know, even using taking deep breaths with your hand. So I love using 5 deep breaths with your hand. So you take your one index finger and you trace up the side of your thumb and you breathe in and then you breathe out and breathe in yeah. and breathe out. And then by the time you're all done, you've done 5 deep breaths. Mm-hmm. Some people call it mountain breathing. I'm trying okay. to make sure my hand stays yeah. on the camera. And so that it's a great way to calm kids down to do something as simple as that, or even pretending your belly is a balloon and breathing in and expanding the balloon and then breathing out and contracting the balloon, or pretending like you're breathing, smelling a flower and blowing out birthday candles and really making the fist and making it seem like you are smelling a flower and making a candle and then blowing it out.
Yeah. Just, yeah. Those are great visuals too. Cause I think you yeah. can use those at home with your child ahead of time. So that yeah. they aren't like going, what is she talking about coming into right. this room, you know, and all this. And the other child of course is going to think that anyways, cause yeah. they're not used to your parenting or what you do at home. But if their play date is going, oh yes, this is something that we do, they're more likely to engage in it as well.
Yeah.
And I love that because oftentimes when we come into those situations, we want to try to solve the problem right away.
Right.
That is not the right thing to do. I'm assuming yeah. by your answer that, you know, this is what we should do first. That is definitely not the right approach.
Well, because they're so heightened, they can't hear you. It's not a time. That's not the moment where they can hear and have a rational conversation. They are heightened. They mm-hmm. cannot. It is not a rational moment to have that conversation. It's right. not that that conversation won't happen. It'll happen later. But I always like to start with those calming activities. Even taking a cool sip of water can really, I mean, just even having the cool, that really can help calm angry kids down, or even like a cold compress on the back of their neck, mm-hmm. Playing with some ice, something to get them cooler and calmer mm-hmm. to help de-escalate the heat of the moment, and actually using temperature, which I love to do.
That's amazing. I never heard that before. it's definitely something to try.
Yeah. And then also, I love calming jars. I'm obsessed with them. I have a ton of them at my house. So I always have them around, and I used to keep them around. My kids used to have, you know, several in their room, because I would always, you know, try a different one. Let's see what I do when I do with like stars that glow in the dark and paint and all this stuff. So they would have all these sorts of calming jars. And so that would be something, you know, I could have the calming jar swirl and then have the kids look at it and have them settle, have them settle their mind as the glitter settles to the bottom of the jar. So definitely. All about calming.
Definitely. Yeah. So we get them calm, and then we move on to.
Then if they seem like they are able to have a conversation, then do a quick debrief, sort of like ask each of them what happened, and then make sure that they each get a turn, give them each equal airtime to be able to say their piece, because I feel like, you know, kids want to be heard. They want to feel like somebody is listening to them. So as long as you give them that space, okay, this happened and this happened. And then, okay, we can talk about, oh gosh, you know, maybe that we don't put hands on each other. That's something that is a rule in our house. We don't put our hands on one another. So, and then making that next step to say, okay, so now what do we do? Now what's going to happen? And sometimes that means maybe that first activity didn't go well. So let's switch activities. I will sometimes have them switch from indoors to out. I will sometimes have them switch from upstairs to downstairs, anything to like give a new sort of new space.
Yes, definitely. Because when you move, you tend not to associate then the situation that happened somewhere else. We're in a new space, and yes, definitely. That's great.
And then, you know, I would continue to, you know, monitor, keep your eye out, keep your ear out, see what's going on, and notice if it's starting to escalate again. If it's starting to escalate again, then we need to step in, and then maybe think about, you know, maybe this is one of those times where we need to sort of like call it a day sooner rather than later. And that is okay.
Right. Yes. Yeah. That's a very good thing to remind parents of, that, if we don't make it to the end of the allotted time, it wasn't not successful. We did as much as we could, and we're moving towards a goal. Yep. And any progress towards that goal is progress.
Yep.
And we tend to forget that sometimes when we set more lofty goals than maybe the situation called for.
I know. And it's so hard because I know what it's like when you're setting up a play date and there's a lot of feeling and emotion behind it and you want it to go well, and then it really turns into a disaster. And that's okay. And that's life. And the best thing you can do is use it as a moment, maybe not then for your child, but later on, and then use it between the parents to be honest and to debrief with the parent, like, gosh, that happened. Goodness. Let's see, you know, and just be upfront about it. Yeah. Like this is what has happened. This is really challenging. And they're going to be right there with you. This is really challenging.
Right. Yeah. It is good to keep those conversations going with that parent afterwards. And I think sometimes when we see those things fail, we just pull off and say, this is, you know, just not going to work. And we never talk to that person again. Right. But that doesn't help. It doesn't help us. It doesn't help our child, because we need to be able to advocate and ask that parent too, what could I have done better? You know, I need to be vulnerable, like you were talking about before. I need to learn through this process. And I think some of that afterwards is processing that about not only what could have happened better between the children, but what could I have prepared my child for more?
Yeah.
And so what are some other takeaways that that we can work on, I guess, afterwards when we have those types of situations happen in a play date?
So I think I love your idea of reflecting, self-reflection, and doing a little bit of that, like what could go better the next time? So, you know, when I had a play date that went horribly wrong. I reflected and I thought, okay, that lasted too long. It was too open-ended. And he was hungry.
When
I sat back and I looked at those things, I thought, okay, well, that was just silly of me. Like, of course, it's like, this is the time of day. He's starving. Sometimes it just takes you, like, sometimes it just takes you to be okay with not having it go as perfectly as you wanted it to go. And just to be like, all right, let me reflect on that. But then I also think it makes sense when your child is calmer later to have a deeper conversation with them about, oh gosh, I noticed that this happened. What went wrong? And what can we do differently the next time? And think about and have that conversation with them and have them know, you know, just because you have an argument, just because something goes wrong does not mean that, you know, friendships end. When you have an argument with somebody, it doesn't mean that your friendship has to blow up immediately. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so common where, you know, it's conflict and then no talking whatsoever. That's not real life. Like, that's not a marriage. That's not.
Exactly. Yeah, we're not teaching them relational skills because relationships are about going through those hard things with other people because we're all imperfect and it works out that way. Yep. But I love what you were saying about having that conversation with them and giving them also the ability to speak into what they saw as potential problems. Because eventually, I mean, this is something we want them to take over. Like we said, as we take away that scaffolding, can they notice things that are going to, you know, we as a parent, of course, are going to make those determinations too. But did they notice those things going on?
Yes.
And have that conversation with them, you know, even when they're younger. I'm sorry. I set this time when you were hungry. Is what are some other things that maybe was going on, things in the room or things that, that, you know, just body language of that other person. And that's definitely things that kids on the autism spectrum don't often think about. So if you have a child that has those issues, to start bringing those out and have those conversations, because then they're going to go, oh, I didn't even think about that. Well, maybe I should notice that next time.
Yeah. And it's a great opportunity to have those conversations, to bring up those different things that they may not have thought of. And they can come up with some amazing insights. Even little ones can come up with, like, my goodness, I was hungry.
Yeah. Because they'll take on the guilt themselves and say, oh, you know, I just really messed up, you know, and mom said all this, you know, they're thinking this in their head. Yeah. I know my kids, when they were little, would often, you know, they just would beat themselves up because something went wrong. But to point out to them, here were some things that were off.
Yep.
You know, that's just the way life is. When we get off, we get off, and it tends to skew us really off sometimes. Yep. And so, yeah, that's just the way it is. And I think the more you notice those things, you know, you as a therapist too, you notice when you speak truth to those things, when you speak them out loud, you notice them more in the future. And so the more we do that, the more experiences our children have. And I think that's what we're talking about too, is we've got to do this a lot, don't we?
Yes. And that's, and I love the book. It's So Much Work to Be Your Friend by Rick Lavoie. And it sounds like an awful title, but it's actually a wonderful book. But it can be a lot of work to be somebody's friend. And he talks about the spiral of social skills. So in order to get better social skills, you have to have the opportunity to do it. And then you have to have some good experiences with it, which mean that you have, that people want to hang around with you, and then you have more experiences. And so it sort of builds on itself. It's like this building spiral, but that's what playdates are. It's this, that starting of a building block of, I can do something. And even if it goes horribly, if there was one thing that went well, like the child greeting the person at the door with whatever, like in a great way, fantastic, wonderful, I'll take it. Let's go for greeting and having them come in the door. Like, that's the next time.
Yes, definitely. You got to celebrate those small victories. Yeah. And definitely, you know, let your child know that you are celebrating that.
Yes.
And it's not just a discussion about what went wrong, but let's just be happy about what we've improved on. You know, that's our goal, is to keep getting better. And in anything that we do, you know, that's, you're never good at something until you've done it a lot of times, and still you're not perfect, but you do get better. And our kids need to learn that lesson, that it's not just school that's sometimes hard, but relationships are hard, and that there's other things in life that require us to just keep pushing through our mistakes and our difficulties. And it's hard when you've got other people that have those mistakes and difficulties bringing into it. So and then you add more people. So as we're kind of bringing this to, you know, to an end, as you know, I'm sure we've got a couple other things to cover, but our goal is not just one-on-one.
Right.
Our goal is to relate to groups of people and society. Yeah. That's where we really want our children to become comfortable.
Right.
So how do we start that process of saying, okay, and then, well, first of all, when do we start taking those steps, you know, and saying, I think we're ready to maybe do a little more of a, maybe two people instead of one. So what advice do you have for parents in that realm?
So I would say, you know, when you've had a couple of, you know, a few good experiences on play dates at your house, then I would say the next step is go to somebody else's house. Try that out and see how that goes. If that continues to go well, you can maybe potentially meet at a local park, because if you meet at a park, there will be other kids there. There will be more interaction. Now, it's a little bit more tricky when you go to a park, because you don't have control over who's going to be there. But it gives kids an opportunity to practice the skills that they've already learned. So if they're doing pretty well by themselves with one person on a play date at their house, they're doing pretty well with one person at their house. Let's take it to the next level. Let's try a park. Let's see how we do, you know?
Yeah.
Or you can expand the time of a play date. That's another way to sort of push it a little bit. You know, how, you know, it's been like an hour. What if we try 2 hours, and what does that look like? And then expanding how many people you have over. Now this can get really tricky, because I find especially with girls, three is very tricky.
Someone always gets left out.
Yes.
Even boys, I found that happens. It's just, I think it's just our natural tendency to kind of motivate to one person. And that third wheel is just, it doesn't make it easy.
It's like, it happens all the time, you know, like, and it's hard, especially because, you know, when you have siblings and one has a play date, it automatically almost seems like that sibling becomes a third wheel, you know, it can be a little bit tricky. So to go from two, honestly, to four is a little bit easier, because then you have sort of this, like, these four kids who can play something together. You know, maybe they can play a board game together. Maybe they can, you know, play with water beads together. Maybe they can play outside together. Maybe they can play at the park together. So it gives you that, it gives a chance to keep expanding and getting better and being challenged appropriately, which is tough. And again, things
are a balance there, because you don't want to push too fast, too hard, but you don't want to make it too easy. And then the skills to just kind of, you know, solidify there and go, well, we're happy in this little space. And but that's not the goal. The goal is to keep building on them.
Yeah. And that can be tricky. That balance is so tough as a parent to try and find between, you know, I want to push my kid. I want to push them so that they learn these skills, but I don't want to push them so hard that it feels defeating to them. It feels like they're never going to get better at it. And to be framing it like, when you're talking about taking that next step, doing that next thing, you should have the conversation with the children as well, you know, saying, you know, you're doing so well. with this. You're doing so well with kids coming over to our house. Let's see how you do with going over to somebody else's house. It may feel scary. It may feel like it's not going to go well, but let's talk through the different things that could happen. Let's figure out how we can make it go the best that it can. And right. if something happens, mistakes happen. Mm-hmm. Not a big deal. We'll learn from it. And it's just, I think, in the way that parents can frame it for their kids. Like, you're not going to be perfect at everything. There is nobody who is perfect at everything. No mm-hmm. one. So be okay with that.
Yeah, I love that. Framing it, definitely. Because, yeah, our child then goes in with the expectation, I'm going to do my best, and my best is good enough.
Yeah.
Instead of, I'm going to go into this perfect, and then it's a failure because I did one thing wrong. And right. it's not a failure. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, definitely preparing them for success is preparing them for reality.
Yeah.
That's what success is. It's handling the good and the bad together and coming out saying, you know what, I did what I have learned and I will learn from what I did.
Yeah, exactly.
I got to take every day like that. So, yeah. All right. Do you have anything else to add in as we kind of wrap this up? I know we covered
Oh my gosh. That did go very quickly.
I know.
It really does. You know, I want parents to know that it is okay to play themselves too. Like they can do some playing and they should have some fun as well. Whether that's playing a game with your children and using that as an opportunity to, you know, have some fun, but also practice those skills before they go into a play date when, you know, they're trying to figure out how to play a game and how to win and lose graciously. Those are huge skills. So to practice with them beforehand, but then also introduce them to some of your favorite games too and show them that you can be playful and that you have fun too. I love that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I'm going to put up your website. It's Encourage Play. And then also I'm going to put up an image of it to see if it comes up.
Oh, there it is.
Let's see if we can scoot around. Oh, I don't know. I'm getting used to this brand new program here. So, Anyways, I'll figure this out eventually. But so that's your website. It's Encourage Play. And you've got some great stuff on there for families, suggestions for just playing together. You've got some blogs. You have a podcast.
Yeah.
And so definitely check out Janie's website, encourageplay.com. And like I said earlier, she's got a workbook and another book. The book is on social skills for kids and has games and activities for a little bit larger groups, you said. So not just the one-on-one play dates, but for 3 to 5 kids about.
Yep, absolutely. And then this summer, I'm actually going to be launching a play date book. It's called The Ultimate Play Date Guide. So it's all ideas about different ways that you can set up play dates, all the stuff that we talked about during this talk, but also just helping parents understand the social development of play, understanding what play is and the different types of play that there are, and ideas for what to do on a play date, because I think sometimes parents get frozen and they have no idea what to set up. And, you know, it's sort of the same things over and over again. And I wanted to give some different, you know, suggestions, ideas, all different ideas about ways that kids can play and setting up good play date time. So that should be
creative people like you that are not creative at all, at least in that mindset. I can be creative in other areas, but playing is definitely not one. When my family plays a game, they have to like drag me into it. But I know I'm just not one of those. My siblings all love games, and I kind of grin and bear it and go, okay, I'll just do it. And it is fun. But there's some of us who are just keep urging us. I encourage you, if you've got somebody in your family like me, just keep telling them to join you. They'll eventually nag on them enough.
Yeah, but you know what? I bet there's other things that you do that are playful. And play is really just an attitude. So what you know that?
Yeah, I do aerial silks. I always yes, but
you play.
I do. I spin in the air in my garage every morning, but
oh, that sounds amazing. See, you totally play. That is play for you.
Yes, exactly. So, yeah. Well, this has been so fun, Janie. I'm really glad I've had the opportunity to interview you and just all the wonderful things you've had to share with our viewers. And so definitely I encourage you to check out Encourage Play and all that Janie has. This has been wonderful. I know, like I told you when we started, this is how my kids made friends, and they still have these friends in their 20s. And it isn't about always having a huge group that you can be friends with. You know, those social skills develop through interpersonal relationships and how you just interact with people. And we have to do it for the long haul to really learn.
Yeah.
And it's those people we've been friends with for a long time that get to know us who can call us out as well.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's what you need in your life. And you don't need a ton. You just need one or two.
Yes, exactly. So true. Well, I just want to thank all of you for joining us on this broadcast and for testing out this beta version. It's been a ride. We'll see how the video turned out when we're done, but I guess it's supposed to go live next week. So, and I'm talking with the developers on the phone later this week to work out any last minute bugs. So, so thanks for being willing to do this with me, Janie. I appreciate it. And for all of you watching. So next week we are going to wrap up our month long series on summer learning. So we're talking about things that aren't related to books and curriculum, but things that encourage you to learn and to encourage your child to learn. Last week we talked about empowering you as a parent. And next week we're going to talk about hands-on STEM learning. So just some different ideas on how to do math and science and all of those subjects without taking out a book. And some hands-on activities. So that'll be our wrap-up for summer learning next week. So definitely join us here on the Sped Homeschool Facebook page, or if you listen to our podcast, it'll be published on our podcast channel or on YouTube as well, where all of this goes. And we just thank all of you for watching, for supporting our nonprofit, Sped Homeschool. We are a 501c3 nonprofit. And we are starting to get sponsorships for our broadcast starting in July. We have some of our partner organizations will be sponsoring our podcasts and shows, which we're excited to do for them because they have products that we really want you to know about that work really well for families who homeschool children with special needs. So anyways, thanks all for joining us. Let's keep the conversation going in the Sped Homeschool Support Group here on Facebook. We have, I think it's now up to 1,700 families on there. And we're talking about homeschooling, special education, and all the questions in between that you could ever think of. So thanks again, Janie. I appreciate your time and your wisdom. It has been a joy just getting to know you and interviewing you tonight.
Thank you so much for having me, Peggy. I appreciate it.
You are so welcome. All right, everyone. We will see you next week here on Sped Homeschool Conversations. Have a